Welcome to Everyday Miracles with Candace McClain, opening your mind to unlimited possibilities. Inspirational, compelling stories from leading transformers who motivate you to overcome the odds, break down barricades, and shift your beliefs, emerging stronger than ever. Share in the journey and find a new path full of miracles waiting to be discovered. Now, here's your host, Candace McClain.
Hi, welcome to Everyday Miracles. I'm Candace McClain, and I'm so glad you could join me today. We're heading into a great long weekend in both the U.S. and Canada. Tomorrow is our official holiday here, and Monday in the U.S., so it's a great time to, you know, show some patriotism, of course, but to go out and enjoy some of this beautiful weather. Hopefully you're having gorgeous weather like we are here. Well, today on the show, we're really opening our minds to unlimited possibilities with author and journalist Steve Volk. He has written a fascinating new book called Fringeology, How I Tried to Explain Away the Unexplainable and Couldn't. Have you ever tried to do that? Well, according to Steve, more than 70% of Americans today believe in paranormal activity. And really, this must be the case when you look at all the popular shows that are out, like the Ghost Hunters, Destination Truth, among so many others. But in the course of writing this book, Steve encountered many others just like him who were kind of resistant about sharing their paranormal or spiritual experiences. I know for me it took a long time to share some of the experiences that I've had with other people. It started with my close friends, and I think eventually, you know, a few more close friends, and it kind of expanded from there. Also, in my practice of hypnotherapy, you know, when a new client comes to see me for the first time, often, you know, right away they'll come out with the stories and all of these things that have happened to them. And for them, it's such a relief because they haven't felt like they could tell anyone these stories. So hopefully that's changing now, and we can open up this conversation more, and people will be more willing to share and you know, just feel free to talk about it. And of course, even on the show today, we'd love to know what your experience has been. So feel free to send us your experience, or maybe you have a question for Steve today. You can do that through our instant feedback form at www.transformationtalkradio.com. You'll find it right on the homepage, nice and easy. And of course, as always, you can always call in, of course, with your experience or question, whatever it is. The number to call today is 1-800-930-2819. Well, let me introduce you to our special guest today. Steve Volk is a senior writer at Philadelphia Magazine. His work has also been published in Rolling Stone, Vibe, Men's Health, and Philadelphia Weekly. Steve has regularly covered politics, crime, and media. But there's one story he has long resisted telling publicly, and this is a family ghost story that he grew up with as a child. And so perhaps he'll share a bit of that story with us today. And now Steve is reconciling that part of his life with his down-to-earth occupation as a journalist. And the result is his new book called Fringeology. In this book, Steve investigates the entire field of the paranormal. He talks about everything from ghosts, near-death experiences and UFOs, to religious and spiritual practices like prayer, meditation, and lucid dreaming. Steve, welcome to the show.
Candace, thank you so much for having me, and what a beautiful introduction. It was just perfect.
Thank you. It's great to have you. But I really need to know, how did all this happen for you anyway? How do you go from being a journalist who covers, you know, fairly traditional topics like politics and crime and media to the paranormal?
I think it's sheer chutzpah. Sheer chutzpah. You know, an overdeveloped sense of confidence, maybe. You know, it really, the book started when I was 6 years old for me. And I did resist telling it for a long time. But I guess we'll start at six for the moment. That's when the family ghost happened. And I have fragmentary memories of it myself. But, you know, they're childhood memories, so they're not that trustworthy. They're vivid, and they're as vivid as any other memories I have, but I really had to kind of rely for this on the testimony of my father and my brothers and sisters. And so what it was we would hear a really big booming sound in the walls of the house, or our sisters, I should say, would hear it up in the walls of their room. My brother and I swore it was coming from the roof, directly over our heads. And so it was always weird because we had, you know, we didn't have adjoining walls, so we could never tell really where this noise was coming from, but it was a big thudding sound that would wake us up. It would only occur in the middle of the night, and it would happen once or twice a week. And it was so loud that it would wake my parents up on the first floor. And in the midst of all this, my sisters were complaining that some really dramatic things were going on in their room, that the blankets were pulled from their beds, that they saw an old woman walk through the room and pass through the wall, that their four-poster beds would just shake in the middle of the night as if somebody was twisting them left and right. And my parents, as I think a lot of parents would have done, they kind of set that aside because it was kids telling this story. Who would want to think that their children were being haunted on top of that, right? And then thirdly, the only thing we were all experiencing was this noise. And it went on for about 9 months, and they looked for mundane explanations. But, you know, the usual things like the house settling or a water hammer, you know, trouble with the water pipes, didn't fit. The water pipes went up only a very short distance up into the walls of the house, and water hammers don't go on for tens of minutes. They don't occur only at night when no one has just been using the, you know, any of the plumbing systems.
Right.
And this would go on for such a long time and was so loud, they just couldn't find an explanation. And they tried to recreate the noise and couldn't. So finally, sort of at wit's end, because they were tired of losing sleep, my father ultimately went to the family priest because they thought, well, you know, maybe we really do have a ghost. And the family priest came over and he blessed the house. And that night, things were actually worse.
Really?
That night, the banging went on longer and louder than ever. We children were really frightened. We ran downstairs, and our parents were considering just leaving for the night. When the noise did something it never did before, it moved. It hit at the top of the stairs, and then it came down one step at a time.
Wow.
My dad describes it as sounding like a child, a really big child, throwing a tantrum, hitting each step on the way down as hard as they could. So when they hit the landing, they did it with like this big two-footed dismount. You could feel the floor shake under your feet. And that was it. We never ever heard it again.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. And so, look, I mean, of course I resisted telling that story. Because
yeah.
It's absolutely incredible. And my credibility as a reporter is the most important thing that I've got. So what eventually brought me around to telling it were some of those statistics you were referring to earlier. 20% of the population believes they've experienced a ghost. 20% believe they've experienced a UFO. In some polls, it's much higher than 30%, but usually it's around 30% believe they've had a psychic experience. And these aren't the same people, right?
Right.
So the total percentage of Americans who believe they've experienced something paranormal is well over 50%. And when I thought about this, I thought, you know, statistically, these stories aren't strange at all. There's just this stigma associated with them that keeps us from telling them. And, you know, for me as a professional storyteller, I mean, that's what I do for a living. You're telling me I have to take a story as incredible as that and just tuck it away in the dark? Nah, you know? So in spite of warnings from a couple of literary agents and an editor that I really, you know, continue to respect and consider a friend to this day, that I should probably not tell this story, I decided, you know, I'm going to go ahead and kind of out my own story as a way of giving other people a permission slip to share their stories. And so far it's working that way. I'm finding that people are posting on my blog at stevefolk.com. They're going through the comments section to tell me stories, or they're finding my email address to tell me stories. And it's really amazing how many people out there have had, you know, some wild things, or at least things they took to be wild, happen to them.
And so when you grow up, grew up with this experience and this story, it really must have just caused you to have bigger questions about,
yeah,
you know, why are we here and what does all this mean?
Exactly. I mean, you know, the thing about the paranormal is we push it to the fringe. That's where the title Fringeology comes from. But the issues that paranormal subjects raise are truly fundamental. Why are we here? What does it mean to be human? Is there a God? What happens when we die? Are we alone in the universe? All these things come up through the paranormal. And I think it's why it's such an emotionally charged topic for people that, you know, you find that a lot of people react to this really stridently in one way or the other because it's really pivotal in terms of their worldview. But my position is that, you know, these stories are so common, we ought to be able to share them. To get to the bottom of them, and also to enjoy these stories. They're good stories. And to not deny a part of ourselves, you know, to not try and hide away a big piece, it seems to me, of what it means to be human.
Yeah, and in a way, we are taught to deny these types of experiences because, you know, science tells us they don't exist, or our parents or whoever. Yet in so many ways, these experiences are more real to people than anything they've ever known before. So it's hard to deny the truth when the truth is so much right there in your face. Well, we are going to head into a quick break, but we are going to have more with Steve Volk when we return. Please stay tuned.
Are you waiting for a miracle to turn your life around? Look no further. Join Candace McClain, a clinical hypnotherapist, speaker, writer, and host of Everyday Miracles, opening your mind to unlimited possibilities. Hear inspirational, compelling stories from leading transformers who've overcome the odds, broken down barricades, and shifted their beliefs, emerging stronger than ever. Let their journeys motivate you and see your life open up in a whole new way. Candace offers a fresh blend of insight, powerful strategies to change your deeply rooted beliefs, and plenty of laughter along the way. Come share in the journey. Tune in Thursdays at 2 p.m. Pacific and 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com for Everyday Miracles, where a new path full of miracles is just waiting to be discovered. Everyday Miracles, opening your mind to unlimited possibilities.
Reservage Organics offers you the most advanced anti-aging product available. Our organic-based resveratrol formula, brought to you from the heart of our exclusive vineyards in southern France, has been clinically proven to reactivate your longevity gene and help preserve your youth. By including Reservage resveratrol in your daily regimen, you can enhance cardiovascular function, metabolism, mental acuity, and collagen production. If you want to regain your youthful radiance and enhance your longevity, do so with the world's finest resveratrol from Reservage Organics. Why wait? Visit your local retailer and start the anti-aging process today. Reservage Organics, committed to the extension of youth naturally. Available online at reservage.com and at the Vitamin Shop, Vitamin World, and Whole Foods Market. Visit reservage.com and feel vitality today.
Naturopathic doctor, founder of the Martha's Vineyard Holistic Retreat, and author of the New York Times bestseller, 21 Pounds in 21 Days, Dr. Ronnie DeLuce has helped tens of thousands of people, including celebrities and athletes, with her message of lifestyle change. Now Dr. Ronnie DeLuce wants to help you. You too can be saved. Email Dr. Ronnie DeLuce at info@ronniedeluceonradio.com and visit mvholisticretreat.com. Dr. Ronnie DeLuce, your partner in wellness.
Hi, I'm Paul Bland. Did you know there is only one truly perfect food protein produced by nature? It can bring dramatic results to your health, your appearance, and overall performance. Introducing Action Whey. No other protein supplement on the market has been able to achieve the incredible health benefits of Action Whey while still achieving a taste that is better than a malt shop shake. Action Whey, for the way nature intended. Visit seaandearth.com. That's SEAandearth.com for more information.
And welcome back to Everyday Miracles. Today I'm speaking with Steve Volk, journalist and author of Fringeology, How I Tried to Explain Away the Unexplainable and Couldn't. Before the break there, Steve shared his family's ghost story. They were haunted by a ghost for quite some time as he was growing up, and this led him to have an interest in the paranormal and to question it and what life was really about. Through this journey, he's met many other what he calls fringe dwellers, people who've experienced paranormal experiences but have been afraid to share them openly. So this is an opportunity for listeners as well to write in or call in today. If you have a question or an experience you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you. You can fill out our instant feedback form at www.transformationtalkradio.com. Well, Steve, as I mentioned there, you did come across a lot of fringe dwellers, as you call them. Tell us about some of the people you met and their experiences.
Well, there was a whole bunch of them, because I looked into ghosts, telepathy, UFOs, spoon bending. I decided to do a book that would take in all these phenomena, because usually these books focus on one or the other, and I wanted to look for some sort of commonality of experience. And I looked at after-death communications and things like that as well. The guy that I can't shake is named Ricky Sorrells, and it was in researching UFOs that I met Ricky. Because UFOs have never really been my thing, you know? Mm-hmm. I've been more personally interested in ghosts and afterlife stuff and psychic experiences, because my own life, I've just run across those things more. And the UFO one, you know, like all of these subjects, has so much stigma attached to it that I just never really had investigated it before. But when I decided to do this book, I thought, you know, I kind of sort of owe it to them almost. Like, as you said, is this sort of the fellow fringe dwellers. I also call them embarrassed Americans, you know, because if you admit to seeing something in the sky you can't explain, you know, the media usually covers you in a way that you find embarrassing afterward.
Yeah.
And so I thought, you know, I should look into these people too. So I scouted around for what I thought would be a really representative case, and the one I settled on happened in Stephenville, Texas, January 8th, 2008. Dozens of residents had what I consider the great misfortune of looking up, and they saw lights in the sky that behaved in a way they just had never seen before. These were a rectangular set of lights that moved with such in such unity that they were taken to represent one craft. And if it was one craft, it was, as one witness put it, as big as a Walmart. And it flew silently, and it could stop, and it could just shoot away in the blink of an eye. It demonstrated all these sorts of capacities. And in Ricky's case, once this January 8th sighting surfaced, he came forward and said that he'd been on his property a few weeks earlier in Stephenville's a very rural part of Texas, and it's literally a cow town. They raise cattle there. And so he was in a place that was secluded even for Stephenville standards, you know. That's real secluded. He was miles away from the nearest neighbor. And he was out deer hunting when he had taken the day off work, and he went out deer hunting, and he stumbled over some brush when he looked up and saw directly over his head what he says is about 300 feet in the air, and he gauged that by a water tower that he was familiar with, that he'd pass under all the time, that he knew was 300 feet high. And so he says this thing was about 300 feet over his head and so big that he couldn't see an edge to it. And it was this metallic gray, what else could he call it but an airship, floating over his head, making absolutely no noise. And on the underbelly of it was a series of inverted cone shapes projecting upward inside the craft. And he took them to somehow be connected to whatever propulsion system there was.
Wow.
And he stood there for several minutes, he says, watching it, trying to stay calm, trying not to freak out. And that when it took off, there was no displacement of the air around him. There was again no noise, and it didn't point a nose up. It just left on a flat plane, if you know what I mean. It stayed flat and just took off. And the way he described it to me is he said, if there's a word for that kind of speed, I haven't heard it. So, look, as a reporter, I have people tell me all kinds of stories. And oftentimes, they're lying right to my face. Mm-hmm. And usually, you know, there's just telltale signs that come with that. You know, you develop an instinct for it. And so here I had a guy telling me a story that, frankly, I could not believe because I had nowhere to put it. It didn't fit into my store of experiences personally. It doesn't fit into my understanding of physics, you know, that such a craft would be possible. And yet, I have to tell you, I believe Ricky Searles. And it leaves me in a position where cognitive dissonance of a kind is, I think, the most rational position. I can't really believe the story, but I can't really disbelieve it either. And I think that too often we feel we have to force ourselves to a conclusion. We have to either believe the story or disbelieve it. Right. And I think in this case, we can just say, you know, I don't know. I don't know what that was or what he saw or didn't see. It seems hard to believe that a sort of a mundane explanation would give rise to such an outlandish tale. But, you know, such things can happen as well. So who knows what Ricky Searles saw? And that's the one that stays with me the most, because I sat across from him in a bar in Texas. And this guy had to be cajoled into speaking with me. This guy did not want to talk to me. And I had to go through intermediaries to convince him that I was all right. And I found that over and over again in Stephenville, that people Googled me, you know, the UFO witnesses Googled me to make sure that I was legit. And that I wasn't somebody who had a history of targeting people like them and making fun of them. And, you know, once they were assured, you know, some doors opened and I was able to speak to some people. But, that one with Ricky, I won't say it haunts me because I've made my peace with it, you know, but it interests me. It's a fascinating experience to have now in my own store of experiences.
Well, were there a lot of commonalities between the different stories that you heard from people?
There's a commonality in the after effect that's really striking to me. And what I'm referring to here is that when people just sort of go through life experiencing the things we normally experience, you know, day-to-day life, where the laws of physics are to be obeyed, you know, and they're always in full view and operating. And then suddenly something happens that sits outside that. It affects people going forward, you know. There were some people I was aware of in Stephenville who sought some counseling after they had their experience with this thing. Part of that, I think, was the social stigma involved with having been a witness, too. But, you know, they had to recalibrate their view of the world. And I found that in some instances, people's filters are damaged, right? What I mean by this is, one weird thing happens, and then something else happens that maybe is a little bit, you know, off kilter, and they throw it into that pile of OC. You know, paranormal stuff happens all the time. Well, you know, the stories are statistically common, and most people have one story or maybe two, right, or three. But it's not as if something paranormal happens every day to you, you know, specifically.
Right.
And some people start behaving and acting as if, you know, everything that happens is a mystery. And for that matter, I mean, you know, Ricky Searles was so anxious after that happened and after he was sort of abused a little bit for coming out with his story. He was so anxious for people to believe him that, you know, he got some pictures of things he saw later on his cell phone. And if you look at these sorts of images, I mean, there's no evidentiary value there whatsoever. I mean, it's not going to convince anyone of anything. But he so wanted something to back himself up with that he would show people this and hope, you know, that they would take it as corroborating evidence. And eventually he just, you know, he kind of shut down and stopped talking about it altogether. And these cell phone pictures I'm talking about were not of the craft that was over his head that day. He didn't have his phone with him. But these were things he told.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember as a young child seeing a UFO, but it was very far off in the distance. I mean, I can't be sure, you know, of what it was exactly, but I just remember me and my dad, we were out in the countryside, and we just stood there and stared off into the sky and couldn't believe it. Like, all you could really make out was that it was kind of saucer-shaped, and it looked metallic, and, you know, and definitely had some sort of light about it. Only time I ever experienced that, but I've certainly heard a lot of stories from people over the years as well, and a few stories from people who, you know, who I trust, who I've known all my life, friends of the family who've experienced some things. You know, one man, a spaceship of some kind or some sort of craft came down right in front of his vehicle and just, you know, hovered there over the road. And, you know, he's never been the same after experiencing that. That's interesting too, how, you know, once you experience this and you touched upon this, we can't send it back. It's like we're changed now.
Yeah, right. Somehow you don't get to send it back.
You don't get to send it back. It's part of you. It's happened now. And then what do you do with that information? And some people might try to deny it. Others might try to get help with it. And others might just, you know, research the heck out of it to try to figure out, you know, what is really going on. But we're going to take another...
Okay, sorry? Go ahead. You're going to another break. Fine.
We are. But when we return, Steve's going to discuss more about some of the experiences he's learned about, some of the ghost stories. So we'll have more with Steve Volk when we return.
Are you waiting for a miracle to turn your life around? Look no further. Join Candace McClain, clinical hypnotherapist, speaker, writer, and host of Everyday Miracles, opening your mind to unlimited possibilities. Hear inspirational, compelling stories from leading transformers who've overcome the odds, broken down barricades, and shifted their beliefs, emerging stronger than ever. Let their journeys motivate you and see your life open up in a whole new way. Candace offers a fresh blend of insight, powerful strategies to change your deeply rooted beliefs, and plenty of laughter along the way. Come share in the journey. Tune in Thursdays at 2 p.m. Pacific and 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com for Everyday Miracles, where a new path full of miracles is just waiting to be discovered. Everyday Miracles, opening your mind to unlimited possibilities.
Ladies, are you living an inspired life? Do you yearn for a more passionate, dream-filled life? Here's Linda Joy, founder of Aspire Magazine, and she has a gift for you.
Aspire has launched its Mission to Inspire initiative with a commitment to give away 100,000 one-year digital subscriptions to women around the globe. Every subscription comes with a multitude of free gifts from our teen inspiration partners.
To claim it all, go to AspireMag.net today. No purchase necessary, and live an inspired life.
Is Egypt calling you? Are you dreaming of taking a spiritual pilgrimage to one of the most magical destinations on the planet? Being in Egypt immerses you in the realm of infinite possibilities. The veils are thinner, your connection to your full potential more accessible, and your heart opens more easily. Picture yourself meditating inside the Great Pyramid, exploring the sacred temples in exclusive visits, and cruising down the Nile on a luxurious sailing yacht. If you're interested in travel that transforms and rejuvenates you, join Dr. Friedemann Schaub and Danielle Rama Hoffman, author of The Temples of Light, for a spiritual and healing journey to Egypt this November. Call for more information, 866-903-6463. That's 866-903-6463. Or visit EgyptIsCalling.com. That's EgyptIsCalling.com.
8 out of 10 people suffer from chronic lower back pain. Are you one of them? Finally, a simple, inexpensive way you can stop the pain at home. It's called the Vacupractor. The Vacupractor's unique patented method uses vacuum pressure and leverage targeting only the lumbar region. You'll get guaranteed results or your money back. And it's far less than a trip to the doctor's office. Finally, a back pain treatment that works.
For more information about the Vacupractor or to order yours, call 800-676-9320 or visit vacupractor.com.
Hey, welcome back. We're having just a fascinating discussion today with author and journalist Steve Volk. And you can check out his new book. It's called Fringeology, How I Tried to Explain Away the Unexplainable and Couldn't. Now, this book, I believe, covers spiritual experiences, ghosts, UFOs. Pretty much, if it's paranormal, it's in the book, right, Steve?
Pretty much. That was the goal.
So, Steve, if people want to get in touch with you or learn more about you or the book, where can they go for more information?
Well, see, what I've been giving out my email address, stevevolk@mac.com, M-A-C.com, and it's Volk like the Volkswagen car without the swaggin. So Steve Volk, one word, at Mac, M-A-C.com, and my website is stevevolk.com. So it's pretty easy to get in touch with me, and the website, you could contact me just by leaving a comment on one of the blog posts, if that's what you want to do. So, you know, and the book is available through Amazon and you know, pretty much any way you want to get it.
Great. Now, in the book, you cover a lot of spiritual experiences as well that people have had. And one area in particular is near-death experiences.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what you discovered.
Well, I'll tell you, I looked into that story through the story of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, with whom I'd imagine you might be familiar. Do you know Elizabeth Kubler-Ross?
Yes.
Yeah. She's a lady who wrote on death and dying, one of the most important books of the last century. I mean, it is really amazing to be able to say that, given how many books are released. But, you know, it really was that pivotal. It galvanized the entire hospice movement, nationally and internationally. And exposed the elephant in the room. Death was kind of a taboo subject. The book came out in 1969. She was doing her research into the early, you know, to mid and late 60s. And at that point in Western medicine, the terminally ill were ritually neglected and were often not even informed of their diagnosis, because doing so forced all the people around the terminally ill to confront their own mortality. This included the loved ones and the medical staff. So Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote this book that diagnosed everybody. And she listened to these stories from the terminally ill, but she didn't just hear about their psychological, you know, trials as they approached their own death. They also told her these really incredible stories, if they had been resuscitated, about seeing their body below them, about leaving their body and witnessing the resuscitation procedure, and they seemed to be able to describe it completely accurately. They talked about maybe entering the tunnel and experiencing the white light and the feelings of peace and going to another realm and not wanting to come back and visiting with deceased relatives, all the things that we now take as part of this classic near-death experience. But this was, you know, this was about a decade before the near-death experience was ever written about, and which then happened in 1975. So she was knocked off her moorings by this. She did not expect this and did not know what to do with it. And I interviewed her. She's passed away in 2004. So I interviewed her research partner, the Reverend Mwalimu Omara, who was by her side throughout all this. And what was really amazing to me is that they resisted these stories initially. Even a reverend didn't know what to do with them and resisted the stories and tried to debunk them when they came up. But they kept hearing these things so often that by the time she was sitting down to write on death and dying, they had changed their minds. They had started cataloging these stories. One of the reasons is that the near-death experiences that people were having were so powerful that you could tell the difference between the people who had one and the people who hadn't, because the people who had were not anywhere near as afraid of their death. They were very accepting of what was coming. They just wanted to be very proactive about getting right with their family before they left, essentially, for the next world. And so they ended up keeping files on all this stuff. And when she sat down to write on death and dying, she wrote a whole chapter, without calling them near-death experiences, about these events. And she showed the book to Reverend Amara the night before, literally the night before it was due, and she was supposed to send it into the publisher. And he advised her to go ahead and withhold it, to not include it. Mm-hmm. And his thinking was that, you know, she was already taking on this really taboo topic, and she could potentially stigmatize the entire project and give her critics ammunition with which to attack her if she included this chapter. And so she ended up agreeing, and she left the chapter out. And I have to say, I think they made the right decision. But it shows you how sort of tortured our relationship is to the paranormal. Because in hindsight, it's very obvious she had real data there. The near-death experience is now an accepted part of medicine. This happens. They'll dispute over the source of it. You know, does it represent a real trip to the afterlife, or is it some kind of brain illusion? And yet she felt she couldn't share this particular data because it suggested the possibility of an afterlife. And so, you know, I start the book there in some ways because it, you know, it gets across that we need to rethink this, folks. We need to stop pushing these sorts of stories to the side.
And can you see that there is a shift in that? Do you find that people are, you know, becoming more open now, especially with books like this out, books like yours out, and the way, you know, the media is starting to, you know, incorporate these kinds of stories too?
Well, I think we'll have to wait and see how this sells, right? I have to tell you the truth. I'm not bullish on the prospects for the paranormal. I think that these stigmas are pretty firmly entrenched. I think there are some improvements, you know, of late, small ones, but I think it's going to take something fairly dramatic to create a shift. And I think one of the things that would have to happen, I mean, this is one of my motivations for writing the book, one of the things that's going to have to happen is people are going to have to stop keeping these stories to themselves. Think of it this way. If one out of five people has had some directive experience of a ghost, I wonder, has one out of five people in your life told you about it?
Mm.
If one out of five people has seen a UFO, has one in five people that you know told you about it? Now, you're a radio host who's into these things, so your percentage is probably a little higher, but I doubt it's one in five. Has one in three people you've met told you about some psychic experience they've had? If these things are true, and I don't even... To me, the debate about whether they're true or not is it's important, but it's not necessarily the most important thing. You know, the most important thing is that we no longer disregard these stories. But if these are true, and certainly the people who experience them take them to be true, and they indicate something so strange about the world, you'd think you'd want to tell people about it, wouldn't you? But we keep it to ourselves. And so I think the first step that needs to happen is that people need to not be quiet about it.
Yeah, and certainly in your book and in having conversations like this, it hopefully, you know, helps people to be able to share these kinds of things. I know, like I said at the beginning of the show, for me it was like I had a couple close friends, you know, that I could share these experiences with, and then, you know, pretty soon that circle widened a little bit. A few people were let in, a few more. Next thing you know, I've got the hypnotherapy practice and people are coming in and telling me stories, you know, left and right. And it's a wonderful experience even for us as the listener, you know, just to be on that side of the conversation. And the most important thing of all is what that experience has done for them, or what have they taken from that experience? How have they grown?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've seen that with most of the people that you met with and researched for this book, that there must have been quite a shift for them.
Yeah, and I mean, the best case scenario is when it works out well. I mean, and I do think for the majority of people, these sorts of experiences serve to open their minds, you know. Open their minds, you know, not so wide that their brains fall out, but open their minds. And that's certainly what the family ghost story did for me. It's left me, you know, always willing to hear someone out and to not judge them over it. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the things that happens out of this, too. I mean, I've had some people tell me they sort of reappraised these stories because I told them mine. And, you know, they were used to thinking of these being things that, you know, happened to hicks, you know, or the uneducated. And, I have colleagues come to me now and pull me aside to tell me their story privately. You know, because they feel like they got that permission slip.
And how concerned were you when you first put your story out there?
Pretty darn concerned. I got a lot of what I call early on, I got a lot of what I call these second head looks. And what I mean by that is people would look at me like suddenly I'd grown a second head when I told them what I was going to write this book about. And they would literally sometimes just look me up and down, you know, look at my shoes as if I was going to be wearing clown shoes suddenly. And then I'd tell them, you know, what happened and how I was going to use the material. And particularly with colleagues, they'd start to open up to it because they sense that here are the contours of a terrific narrative, you know. Here are the contours of a story. Oh, I can see why you want to tell this. This is a terrific story. And now that the book's out and it's been, you know, pretty well received, I don't feel like anybody's looking cross-eyed at me at all. And in fact, you know, Philadelphia Magazine, I got on leave from here and it was uncertain whether or not I was going to come back to a permanent job or go on contract or whatever, you know, that sort of thing. And they very much wanted me back. So I'm coming back full time and, you know.
People are embracing you now more than
you.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not experiencing any kind of blowback, which I think is a really good thing.
Fabulous. Well, we're going to move to another break. You're listening to Everyday Miracles. We'll be right back with Steve Volk.
Living in a time of great challenges and greater opportunity for transformation. The good news is that public awareness of the need for change is also growing exponentially. More than ever, your transformative message is needed to empower millions across the globe.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pat, host of the Dr. Pat Show, and I'm excited about announcing an unprecedented opportunity for growth as we expand our broadcast by launching Transformation Talk Radio and the Transformation Network. Join me and a team of amazing people and host your own show on Transformation Talk Radio. Get ready to expand your horizons, tap into the best listeners anywhere, and join one of the most positive and expansive networks today.
Historically, there came a time when the boundary of water was transcended as man developed the boat, and the barriers of water became freeways. Join Dr. Pat as she launches this exciting venture. To host a show, call 1-800-930-2819 or email host@transformationtalkradio.com.
The In Search of the Miraculous 3-day workshop at the Omega Institute from July 29th to the 31st can change your life. Learn how to identify and erase your unconscious programs. Experience the quick and profound results of the revolutionary self-healing Dalian method. And fast forward your healing journey into consciousness with direct individual guidance from Mata. To register for this life-changing workshop with Eliza Mata Dalian at the Omega Institute, visit the calendar of events at DalianMethod.com.
Do you dream of being on The Amazing Race? Well, here's your chance. Grab a friend and prepare for an exhilarating race around the city when City Solve Urban Race comes to your city. Teams of two will solve clues and face fun challenges while racing around the city. The winning team gets $300 and a chance to be in the Las Vegas Championship race to compete for a grand prize of $5,000. Not only will you have a ton of fun, you'll also be helping a good cause. A portion of the proceeds will benefit a local charity. To start racing, go to City SolveUrbanRace.com.
Are you waiting for a miracle to turn your life around? Look no further. Join Candace McClain, clinical hypnotherapist, speaker, writer, and host of Everyday Miracles, opening your mind to unlimited possibilities. Hear inspirational, compelling stories from leading transformers who've overcome the odds, broken down barricades, and shifted their beliefs, emerging stronger than ever. Let their journeys motivate you and see your life open up in a whole new way. Candace offers a fresh blend of insight, powerful strategies to change your deeply rooted beliefs, and plenty of laughter along the way. Come share in the journey. Tune in Thursdays at 2 p.m. Pacific and 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com for Everyday Miracles, where a new path full of miracles is just waiting to be discovered. Everyday Miracles, opening your mind to unlimited possibilities.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning in. We are talking about fringeology, how I tried to explain away the unexplainable and couldn't, with author and journalist Steve Volk. By the way, for more information, you can visit Steve's website at www.stevevolk.com. Steve, we were talking a little bit about this already, but I imagine that in doing all of this study and researching the paranormal to the extent that you have, that it really must have affected you profoundly in terms of, you know, who you are and maybe your beliefs, maybe what life means. What have you learned most about yourself through this?
Well, I'll tell you what struck me was that these sorts of experiences, while they happen frequently across a great number of people, they don't happen a lot within any given person's life necessarily, you know. Mm-hmm. And they're sort of tangential, and they hint at something larger. And so, of course, I thought a lot about, well, what is this something larger? And I always believed in God as a kid. And then, of course, doubt creeps in, you know. And but it was a belief that never really left me. And I started, just doubt got deeper, you know. So I started pursuing, really through a chapter on NASA astronaut Edgar Mitchell, I started pursuing things like meditation and prayer and lucid dreaming. And the thing with Edgar Mitchell was he experienced something in space that all the astronauts experience. It's called the overview effect. And what it is when you see the Earth from the vantage point of space, you get it. You get that life is fragile and precious and unlikely. And for us to spring up here in the middle of that vast, vast dark sea of space is seemingly miraculous, right? And so for a lot of astronauts, well, they all have this sensation. They tend to interpret it differently, but they start to see national borders as being sort of arbitrary, and even the borders across belief systems as being arbitrary and in the way of our simply understanding that we are connected, we are in this together. And so when Edgar Mitchell got back to Earth, he researched this feeling, essentially. He wanted to know whether there was a scientific underpinning to it. So he researched it through science, he researched it through theology, and through philosophy. And he took up a meditative practice. And I found myself, through a lot of research I did for the book, I did a lot of research into meditation, aside from Edgar Mitchell, and I found myself taking up a meditative practice and engaging in contemplative prayer, and it did create a shift for me. I'm a lot less anxiety-stricken now. I'm a lot more comfortable with myself now and with the idea that life is fragile, you know, but you get what you get, and you make the most of it that you can. And I actually even, I've resisted being part of any sort of church because of those problems that come up with organized religion. But I found in the Quaker church, I think I've found a home, and so I've applied for membership here in the Quaker Meeting House in Philadelphia. And the reason is because Quakerism is a disorganized religion. you know, there's no officiant, and we just sort of meet and explore every Sunday. I don't know if you know how a Quaker service goes, but it's essentially contemplative prayer and meditation. You sit there in silence, and you wait and see if some message comes to you that you want to share with the people in the room. And I've never been in a room where that many people can sit, and you don't feel judgment from one person to the other. You know, you feel nothing but tolerance and compassion, and it's a really neat community, and I'm enjoying being a part of it.
I wasn't familiar with the Quaker Church at all, and that does sound that sounds beautiful. You know, just to sit with people in silence and you know, connect in that way.
Yeah, if you're inspired, you share something, and if you're not, you just continue to sit and reflect on whatever you want to reflect on.
Go ahead.
No, it's okay.
Do you really think we all have that capability to tap into something so much larger than ourselves, into, you know, a source of information that can help to guide our lives?
Well, you know, I'll tell you this. When you engage in contemplative prayer, which is just a feeling of communion with God, right?
Mm-hmm.
God feels more real. God feels more present. And there are people who are studying the neural correlates of this. You know, they're looking at what happens in the brain. And they're finding that your anxiety centers quiet, your emotional centers where emotion is mediated get more active. And that's where that feeling of bliss and peace and contentment probably comes from. And the space around you, the sense that we always have of what's going on around us, that goes away too. So it really becomes, you know, even in an fMRI scan, there's you there and there's God. So in a sense, right, I mean, I care if it's real, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an experience of God, whether God exists or not, you know. And I think there's something powerful about that. There's something sort of exciting about that. We have the power to experience that connection merely by sitting and thinking about it and observing it. And so, you know, I try and spend some time doing it every day.
That's great to have that kind of practice. So tell me, what's next for you, Steve?
You know, what's next for me is to continue to bang the drum for this book, honestly. It's hard to think of what's next. I mean, I'm going to Quaker Services. I'm promoting the book. And I'm going to start back at the magazine full-time next week, actually. And so I'm going to just continue doing those things. I do have an idea for what the next book is, and it'll involve, meditation and contemplative prayer and some more lucid dreaming. And it's going to be a fitness-oriented book, though. It's not going to be about the paranormal, because these things lead to a richer, fuller experience of life. And so I'm also doing things related to physical fitness. And I want to write a book, the next one out, that's just filled with stuff people can use. But at the moment, I'm really focused on Fringeology, and I hope that people read it and feel more comfortable telling their own story and exploring these things for themselves. That's the goal.
Well, Steve, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been so much fun to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I'll be on again if ever you need.
Absolutely. And best of luck with this new book. And we all look forward to hearing more from you in the future, of course. And you can visit Steve Volk's website at www.stevevolk.com. He's got a great blog on there. He wants to hear from you. Again, that book is Fringeology, How I Tried to Explain Away the Unexplainable and Couldn't. Well, please have a wonderful and safe holiday weekend, everyone. And we'll see you back here next week for another Everyday Miracles.
You've been listening to Everyday Miracles with Candace McClain, opening your mind to unlimited possibilities. Tune in Thursdays at 2 p.m. Pacific and 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com for Everyday Miracles, where a new path full of miracles is just waiting to be discovered.